Purport. The skin is the site of the touch sensation. The demigods who control the production of herbs and medicinal drugs are the deities presiding over the tactile sense. Retastasmad apa asam nirabidyata vaigudam gudad apan opanatscha mityuloka bhayankaraha. After this, semen the faculty of procreation, and the god who presides over the waters appeared. Next appeared an anus, and then the organs of defecation, and thereupon the god of death, who is feared throughout the universe. Lokavayam Kalaha. Therefore, it is understood herewith that the facility to discharge semen is the cause of death. Therefore, yogis and transcendentalists who want to live for greater spans of life voluntarily restrain themselves from discharging semen. The more one can restrain the discharge of semen, the more one can be aloof from the problem of death. There are many yogis living up to 300 or 700 years by this process. And in the Bhagavatam it is clearly stated that discharging semen is the cause of horrible death. The more one is addicted to sexual enjoyment, the more susceptible he is to a quick death. Controlled by the god of fire. Then nostrils. And the sense of smell. And prana, the vital air. So we're at the beginning of a description of the manifestation of the Virat Rupa. Prabhupada describes this development as being similar with the development of the child in the womb. So then, after the sense of smell, came the wind god, who presides over the sense of smell. Then eyes appeared, and the sense of sight. So we've got speech, we've got the sense of smell, the sense of sight. And the sun god presides over the sense of sight. Then the ears and the sense of hearing. And the from that, the demigods, the digdevatas, the directions of space is manifest. And now skin. And on the skin, hair. And here it's mentioned. Smashru. Beard, moustache. And herbs and drugs. You know, we were discussing yesterday how the trees and the grasses and they're likened to the hairs of the universal form. And of course, in those plants, then we get sustenance. And here is mentioned herbs and drugs. Then after that, with the manifestation of the skin comes, and that's the tactile sense, the sense of touch. So what have we got? We've got the voice, which is karmendriya, same as the skin, also part of that. So, what have we got? The voice. And speech. Yeah. Then nostrils for smelling. Eyes for seeing. Ears for hearing. Huh? Now the skin. For touching, different types of touch and different types of sensual activity. In order for a person to be whole and complete, they need senses. Right? You know, it's considered a tragedy if you're born blind. Can't see, or if you were born deaf. This is a common or sometimes this is the most common. So we're considered incomplete without these senses. Or sometimes people become a quadriplegic, right? So they can't move. So this is considered to be a great loss or a great lacking. In order for a person to be full and complete, they need all of their senses intact. Right? And this is what makes up personality. Right? This is what makes up personality. And so we see from this description of the Virat Rupa how everything ultimately comes from a person. It's hard to see it when we walk out. I remember when I was a teenager, even as a boy, walking out into the world and thinking, what's this all for? What's the point of this place? Huh? I remember walking out in the backyard of the house that we used to live in Elizabeth at night and look up at the skies and see all the stars and think, wow, what's this? What's going on here? And things happen to us. As it appears as if by random, something happens and we think, why did that happen? Huh? So it's very hard just looking at the external manifestation of the creation to work out that there's a person behind it. Very hard to see that. But the Bhagavatam underlines this point that ultimately everything comes from a person. And so the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, the Vedic literature, gives us the vision or the ability to see the personality behind the workings of the creation. So we were discussing yesterday the sun and the moon are the eyes of the Virat Rupa, and they allow us, or they facilitate us, to see. They facilitate our sensual propensities. When you think about it, we like to be treated as persons, and we know that our being, our identity, is manifest as a person. We don't like to be treated impersonally. That's why the material creation is so bewildering, because it appears to be impersonal. But the Bhagavatam teaches us how to see everything ultimately is coming from a personal cause. Even it's said that God is one. Right? God is one. Yes, that's true. But also God is many. Right? Like Eko Bhagavatam. Right? He's the one that's supplying all of the ingredients to all of the many. Right? That's all of us. And for himself as well. So the key of Krishna consciousness, in one sense, is to see everything in this relationship with Krishna. I mentioned this the other day. Prabhupada says the purpose, the goal of life, the aim of life. Of course, Prabhupada says, on many occasions, many different aims and goals of life. The purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. You can look it up in a database. A Prabhupada gives various alternatives. Ultimately, it's to be Krishna conscious. But Prabhupada says, the aim of life is to see that everything belongs to Krishna. And so that's being emphasized here. In that the material form, the Virat Rupa, or the what is it? I think it was mentioned up here before. In this verse. Here. The Virat Purusha. Right? Purusha means person. Right? So, aim of life is to see that everything belongs to Krishna, and the Bhagavatam here is giving us the meditation or the connections, putting all the connections together as to how each feature of the material creation is actually an element of that Virat Purusha. And which element it is, we can't see it necessarily without, training. Otherwise, you'll see the broad perspective of everything that's going on, but not understand its purpose, and not understand all of the different elements and their relationship to the Supreme, and how the Lord is facilitating our activities through that manifestation of the material creation. Who's in charge? Ultimately, he's in charge. We'll be learning here that he provides that facility, or he delegates. Basically, Krishna's the supreme delegator, and he gives that responsibility to look after things to all of the different demigods. And so we can see all these connections, very complete meditation, actually, on how the material creation is manifest and how it's an expansion of all of the different energies of the Lord. And that requires some training. You know, I'm thinking of a horse. I don't know why I'm thinking of a horse, but anyway, I'm thinking of a horse. You can look at a horse, right? And you just see a horse. Right? You can look at a cow, and you just see a cow. But, you know, somebody like Manny Grieve, he's a farmer. So when he looks at a cow, he sees something different. He looks at the size of the shoulders, he looks at the size of the, you know, the backside, he looks at, is it a boy or a girl? Obviously. But these are fairly basic observations. But then how big is the udder? Huh? That will give an indication of how much milk it will give. So, you know, you can look at something with an untrained eye and just see the form of things, but not without understanding all of the features. So especially with an untrained eye, when a person enters into the material creation, especially under the influence of the material energy, not able to perceive behind all of this is the personality of Godhead. So in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, we're being trained how to see everything in its connection with the Lord. And so it helps us to fulfill this requirement. Prabhupada says the aim of life is to understand that everything belongs to Krishna. So, here, along with the skin, you get hair. Right? You probably noticed that. Moustache and beard. Especially in India, the men like to have moustache. They think they're very handsome with a moustache. Huh? Or with a beard. These days it's, you know, it's cool to have a beard. And these are related to in the herbs and drugs. Then along with the skin comes the genitals. And with that, the faculty of procreation. And the God who presides over the waters appeared. Right? So what comes out of the genitals? Water. Makes sense. Then appeared an anus, the organ of evacuation. And thereupon the god of death. Ooh. Ouch. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, he's described here, Loka Bayam Ankaraha. Loka Bayam Karaha. So what does that mean? Karaha means the cause of, or the doer, the cause of Loka Bayam, fear. For everybody within the creation, everyone's scared of death. Right? Except for the devotee, right? Abhayam, he's fearless. Nobody likes death. Why not? Why don't we like death?
Because too much attached with this material world, this earth, everything.
Maybe.
The soul is eternal.
Yes, that's right. The soul is eternal. So the whole idea of death is unnatural to us. Right? It's foreign to us. We don't want to die because we don't die, ultimately. Huh? Nitya. One of the characteristics of the soul is nitya, eternal. Nityo, nityanam, chetanas, chetananam. That's a verse I quoted before. So we're eternal. We don't want to die because we don't die. We live. The symptom of the soul is life. So the concept of death is totally unnatural to us, yet we're forced, because of identifying with the material energy, we're forced to undergo this embarrassment of birth, death, old age, disease, this this is one of the purposes of sadhana is to understand this point that we're not a body, that we don't die, that we're the soul with this body, that we're not the body. Yet we are the body at the same time. So we have to tolerate this changing, the fate of material existence means we have to undergo these changes. There is no way of avoiding death. Although that's another aim. The another aim of life is to avoid death. How do you avoid death? How do we avoid death?
Avoid birth.
By preserving the semen. Well, that is mentioned here. Now that you mention it, but that's ultimately, even if you preserve your semen, you still don't have to die. Right? You might die. You might die older, but you will have to die. Right? So, how do we avoid death? What's our methodology for avoiding death? Because it is possible to avoid death. What is it?
Don't take birth.
Don't take birth. Exactly. Don't take birth. Then we're going to have to die one more time. Let's make it one more time, right? Not, you know, do it again. there's a song by Daft Punk, who you may not have heard of. But you know what the song's called? One More Time. One more time, that's it. That's the line of the song. One more time. And I'm thinking, yeah, one more time, but it won't be one more time, it'll be one more, on and go. This is the desire of the materialist. One more time. But then you stay in the material world. But the devotee doesn't want, no more. Forget it, no more. Not one more time, I've had enough. So that's the cure for death is to not take birth again. That means in this lifetime we have to perfect our chanting of Hare Krishna, because the chanting of Hare Krishna gives us the realizations that we're not the body, that we're spiritual by nature, and it gives us the taste of spiritual existence, of spiritual life, that transcends any of the attachments or any of the inclinations or attractions of material enjoyment, of material existence. One of the reasons why people are scared of dying is because they don't want to lose what they've got, the opportunity to enjoy, especially in the human form. But the opportunities for engagement and enjoyment and satisfaction and absorption in devotional spiritual experience is facilitated or given to us when we learn how to chant Hare Krishna. Because it uncovers Anandam Guni Vardhanam Pratipadam Purnam Amritas Vardhanam. It's the nectar for which we're always anxious. But in the material world, we're anxious for enjoyment and we want to stay here to enjoy, despite the fact that we're going to have to leave this body. And because we have personality, and that personality is of necessity manifest in our desires, if we can't see a positive alternative or a positive future engagement, then we want to stay in the material realm. But the nature of Krishna consciousness is such that if one can become absorbed in the chanting of Hare Krishna, then a whole realm of spiritual engagement opens up for us. We connect with the internal spiritual realm and we can become detached from the external with confidence, with satisfaction, with enthusiasm, with a higher taste, basically. We've got a material body, and so therefore with that material body comes senses. That's what we're seeing, the development of here in the Virat Purusha, the development of the various senses which are meant for enjoyment. But the real enjoyment is manifest in the spiritual body. That's where it all comes from. And so by chanting Hare Krishna, we uncover the spiritual form, our original spiritual form. And we can learn to engage that spiritual form in the service of Krishna. What is it? Nira harasya dehina? What's that verse? Quoted in the, it's actually from the Vishnu Purana, quoted in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, also in the Narada Pancharatra. It's a Hrishikesha Hrishikena Sevna. Sarvapadi Vinimuktam Taparat Vena Nirmanam Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. So, when we engage our senses in the service of the master of the senses, remember everything belongs to Krishna. So, when we do that, we become purified. We lose our bodily designation and we uncover our original spiritual identification. And from that we get a higher taste. So Prabhupada gives an interesting, in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he gives an interesting it's interesting because Ajahnil was originally a Brahmin, right? Or he born in a Brahmin family. So he learned sense control, mind control, study of the Shastra, whatever. But he fell down due to bad association and became totally absorbed in sense gratification and sex, basically. Yet, despite the fact that he wasted so much semen, because he was able to chant the name of Narayan without offense at the time of death, he was able to perfect his life. So he was heavily addicted to sense gratification and was about to be taken away by the Yamadutas, but because he chanted, he was saved by the Vishnu Dutas. So this is why the chant, people in Kali Yuga very much addicted to sense gratification, and especially sex life. Huh? Even devotees, the major issue for most devotees is following the fourth regulating principle. Huh? But how are we going to do that? How does one control the attachment to sense gratification? How does one overcome or be freed from that? And the methodology is to get a higher taste in spiritual practice. And this is, it's Kali Yuga. Harinama, 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 eva kevalam, talo nasyeva, 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 gatir, anyata. This is the only means. Chanting Hare Krishna is the only means by which we can get a higher taste. Anandam budhivardhanam, pratipranam, punam amritasvardhanam. Right, this is the nectar for which we're always anxious, is in the chanting of Hare Krishna. It's such a simple thing. Its simplicity covers its potency. Right? If you tell people you want to solve all of your problems, chant Hare Krishna. I say, ah, can't, that's not right. It can't be right. Even sometimes we doubt it. If we're chanting with effects, right? Then chanting Hare Krishna is like chewing cardboard. Isn't it? Chanting Hare Krishna and we're not focusing on the name and hearing the name of Krishna, and we're bewildered by material distractions and so forth, then chanting Hare Krishna can be so hard. Anybody experience that? Huh? At the end of the day, 6 o'clock at night, and you've got 10 rounds to chant. Or heaven forbid, you've got 16 rounds to chant. It's like, so hard. there's that verse, that cartoon that Prabhupada would quote from the New Yorker, right? Where the wife was telling the husband, chant, chant, chant. And the husband was saying, can't, can't, can't. So
it was the other way around. The husband is asking, chant.
The husband, was it? No, I think it was the wife. That may be your experience. Yeah. Three words. Not difficult, right? Hare Krishna Rama. I actually said that to my wife when we first started chanting. So what's the problem? Three words, just chanting. Can't you say the words? But it's not just saying the words, it's hearing the mantra. Speech. And the speech, well, it's interesting actually. Speech usually means a tongue, right? Somebody's tongue. And it's mentioned. Devotional service begins with the tongue. Tongue. Chanting, tasting prasadam. That's our exercise of the tongue. And that's our means of success. And we see that with Ajahn. He was chanting. Even it wasn't perfect chanting, but still, it gave him the facility to make further progress. And if we want to conquer death and the fear of death, we need to perfect the chanting of Hare Krishna. Right? When we're chanting, and we're chanting without offense, right, then how do we feel? when you're chanting and all you're listening to is the mantra, how do you feel?
Blissful.
Yeah, it's called Ananda. That's who we are, we're Ananda. We're actually uncovering ourselves by chanting Hare Krishna. So naturally we become happy. It's just natural because that's who we are. We get rid of all the material influence, we're just chanting Hare Krishna, then we feel happy. Because that's who we are. We're actually happy. Because at the moment we just covered over with all this, that, the other thing. Mortgage, electricity, gas payments, kids going to school. What else do you worry about? So many things. Wake up in the morning, so many things. Been asleep for 6 hours and just in dreamland, right? Then we wake up, what's going on? This is why I think it's recommended to have a cold shower. Because what happens when you have a cold shower? You're all of a sudden, awake. At least for half an hour. But you can chant Hare Krishna with a little bit of focus. If you can get connected to Krishna in the first 4 hours, then the next 12 is okay. If you can't get connected, you know, it's like, then it's difficult, it's hard, because, you know, there's the external manifestation of chanting, which is just, you know, saying words clearly and staying awake, basically. But then, the internal part is paying attention and keeping the focus, because the mind will want to wander, right? Chanchalahi puna Krishna, my mind's wandering. But you just got to keep on bringing it back. Now, if we can do that consistently, that association with Krishna, that connection with Krishna, uncovers our natural identity, Satchit Ananda. And then we feel very happy. So it's not very difficult. And Prabhupada's given us that concession, 16 rounds. You know, first asked his disciples, 64 rounds. Like, you know, imagine chanting 64 rounds every day. Then 32, even that was a proper 16. So we've got a concession in one sense. But then we engage, we chant 16 rounds, but then we spend the rest of the time engaged in seva or service. But it rests upon the proper, offenseless chanting of Hare Krishna, or that clearing for us, getting out of the offensive stage and coming into the clearing, at least the clearing stage. And that's where we'll start to get that connection with our original spiritual identity. We'll become happy. And our material desires will be diminished by neglect, basically. We concentrate on chanting and our connection with Krishna, then automatically the material desires will wither because of neglect. We don't pay attention to them. That's our process, actually. So we absorb ourselves in the mantra, that means we're associating with Krishna because he's not different from himself and his name. And then our relationship with Krishna will naturally manifest. Like Prabhupada says, not an imposition. Krishna consciousness is not something that we impose or that we can make up. But rather, it's intrinsic, it's natural, it's innate, it's who we are. And that then extracts us or removes us from the attachments, or especially here in the Kali Yuga, sex, basically. And it removes the fear of death. So many things. We can be relieved of our addiction to material enjoyment, and we can conquer the fear of death by chanting Hare Krishna. It's that simple. But because it's so simple, people go, oh, it's more than that. Huh? Can't be just chanting Hare Krishna. But it is. That's what we do with the Hare Krishnas. So that's why. So we should at least we should do what we are. Or who we are. That's and Mahaprabhu, that's Mahaprabhu's mission. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Deva. Kalo Nasyeva, 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 Kadiva Nyata. So, this section of the Bhagavatam is quite interesting because it helps us see how the material creation is a manifestation of the Lord's personality. Even though originally we see, initially, you know, when we just observe it without a trained eye, it seems impersonal. But if we look at it from this perspective of the Bhagavatam, then we see how everything is a manifestation of this personality in the Virat Purusha. And in order to be detached or you know, detachment is required. One needs to have some knowledge, and one needs to have some genuine spiritual experience to disconnect from the material creation, right? And be absorbed in the spiritual. And we do that initially by chanting Hare Krishna. Initially, but there are, and we engage our propensity to act and to interact with the material creation by seeing it ultimately as belonging to Krishna, having its connection with Krishna, then using it for Krishna's service. So even though the devotees look like the Kamis, you know, we operate cars, we run businesses, we do so many things that apparently are material, but because of every morning we have our sadhana, where we focus our attention not on our personal sense gratification, but on Krishna's sense gratification. That's our goal. And so the activities of the devotees are entirely different because the focus is on serving Rishikesha, Rishikeha, Sivanam. And in that way, that's that mood of devotion. You know, what do they say when you give somebody a gift? Right? It's the mood that counts. Right? That offering. It may not be a very big, just like Sudama Vipra, he gave Krishna just some chip rice, which is chip rice, you know. But because it was given with that, because our activities are conformed with that mood of devotion, then they're completely different from the activities of the materialists. Now, we are effectively absorbed in that mood by chanting Hare Krishna, because when we're chanting, we're praying to Krishna, please engage me in your service, let me be your devotee, let me be your servant. Let me be a servant of the servant. Okay, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
What is the relation of the speech with the video of fire?
The God of fire.
Yeah.
The deity who provides over that organ. The organ. What is the organ of speech? Must be the tongue. Got to be the tongue. Right? Got to be. Voice box. Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, and it's very interesting because the nostrils appear after that. Let's just have a look here. Nirabhidyatasya pratamam. First of all, there appeared mukam, a mouth. Vani, the organ of speech. Then, abhavat came forth. Vanya, with the organ of speech, Vani, the god of fire. Then Nase, Nase. What's Nase?
Nose.
Yeah, it's really interesting how we nasal. In English, you have the word nasal, or nostril, or schnoz. Nose. Nose. Interesting. Nasik. The place of Nasik's got something to do with nose, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sopur was nose affected.
What's that?
Sopur
was nose affected. Oh, okay, that's where the nose got chopped off.
Nasik.
Nasik. That's interesting. Okay, well.
This nose?
Sopur. Okay, now it just says here, Vani, the organ of speech. Mukam Vani. So. And now, just looking here, so it must be the tongue. It's got to be the tongue, I would think. Tongue and voice box. That's part of the speech.
From Bhagavad Gita, we understand that there's fire in the stomach to digest.
Fire is in the stomach
to digest, but here,
yeah. Well, you know, well, fire from speech. You know, we hear a fiery speech. Fiery. I don't know. You have to do some research. This requires some of these, to understand some of these things requires a little bit of meditation and a little bit of research to see what other descriptions are given in other places. Or you just have to accept it because it's coming from the Vedas. So sometimes, you know, we ask a question and you just have to say, look, it says it is stupid, that's what it is. Right? So sometimes we just, but my experience is if you meditate on it, eventually it will be revealed to you what the connection might be. Right? But in this case, yes, the god of fire comes with the organ of speech. So that's the tongue. I would imagine. That's the mouth. And what's the primary organ of the mouth?
Tongue.
Yeah. Gotta be. And that's where speech comes from. What is it? Vajo vegam, manasakroda vegam, jiva vegam. So the tongue is considered to be the most voracious of all of the senses. So it's first here. If you can control the tongue, then you've got your spiritual life all worked out, practically speaking. And how do we control it? Chanting,
eating
prasad. Huh? Yes, you know, at this time of the day, that's the anandam buddhi varvanam, the nectar for which we're always anxious. It's breakfast time, everybody shut up. Let's go have something to eat. Huh? The fire of digestion is pretty ready to go at this time of the day. But I think just an observation is that the this principle of fire exists in many places, not just in the stomach. It's all over. But the god of fire. Anybody like to comment? Anybody got an inspiration or a knowledge of this point? Yes. Yeah. You know, yes, we've already got this. Yes.
Yeah.
You got your hand up.
Yeah. I just found the, because I was reading Second Canto recently.
Yes.
And it's described the approach of Fonte.
Yeah.
So it's Second Canto, chapter 1, verse 29. It talks about the same.
Mm-hmm. Like, what does it say?
This long commentary.
Long commentary. Give us the Rus.
So the text is his answer, the demigods headed by injured the 10 directional sides are his ears, and physical sound is his sense of hearing. His nostrils are the two Ashvini Kumaras, and material fragments is his sense of smell. His mouth is a blazing fire.
His mouth?
Yeah.
Is the?
Blazing fire.
Is the blazing fire.
And then in the Purport Prabhupada says, the description in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11, verse 30, the answer is follows, O Vishnu, I see you devouring all people in your blazing mouths, and covering all the universes by your immeasurable rays, scorching the words you are manifest. In that way, Srimad Bhagavatam is the postgraduate study for the student of the Bhagavad Gita.
Right. So the mouth of the all-devouring mouth of death is like a blazing fire that burns up everybody. There's something to meditate on. Yeah? Right? So here's the, and what did they do at in Puri where they burn all the bodies?
Shamshana.
There's a
crematorium.
Yeah, crematorium, but there's a name for it.
Furnace. Burning furnace?
Yeah, but there's a.
No, especially in Puri.
Where they burn the bodies. Huh? Something to meditate on anyway. The blazing fire of death is the Virat Purusha munching everybody up. But we may be speculating here.
Yeah,
but it's okay. Speculate on the scriptures, fine. If you're just making stuff up, that's no good. But if you can find references in the Bhagavad Gita, because the Virat Rupa, the manifestation of the material, the material universe is described like in three places in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? So you should, we should be able to find some other references, and you'll find a different perspective on the same point. There will be more food for thought. Okay, all right, thank you. Congratulations, Bhagavad Gita.